You are listening to The News Project in studio, brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of GNAT TV's in-depth series. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director here at GNAT TV's News Project, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. It's also a great pleasure to be joined here in the studio by John Copans, who is the program director of the Climate Economy Model Communities Program for the Vermont Council on Rural Development. John has been working with residents of Dorset, as many of you undoubtedly know, to develop and implement strategies to increase economic vitality and affordability in a time of climate change. So your timing here today is good. It's the last month or so, we've been hearing an awful lot about those issues. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, John, for making the time to talk with us today. I guess before we get into the Dorset Tomorrow program that you're doing currently, tell us a little bit about the Vermont Council on Rural Development. It's been around for a while, but what does it do in general?
Sure. First of all, thank you, Andrew, for having me here. Really appreciate the opportunity. So the Council on Rural Development is actually one of about 15 similar statewide councils that exist in states around the country. We actually have been around for a little over 20 years now, and were created as a rural development council by an act in the U.S. Farm Bill. And the idea was that when you look at all of the diverse programs trying to serve rural America, there's sort of a hodgepodge of those programs, and there wasn't a real integration when you look at federal and state programs and local programs trying to serve rural communities. And the idea is we need to bring all of those people around one table together and really think about in a more deliberate way, how are we serving rural places? So for the Council on Rural Development, we have a board of about a little over 20 folks. It includes members of the congressional delegation staff. It includes federal agency folks from like the U.S. Department of Agriculture, from the Forest Service. It includes members of the governor's cabinet. And then some private folks from private industry and nonprofits all around one table. And our real mission is how do we help Vermont communities succeed? We've done that in a few different ways over our history. The real core of our work is something called the community visit process. People are probably familiar with that.
In 2013,
here. There
was one in Manchester.
In Manchester, exactly. Like, that's a good point of reference. It was called Manchester 2020.
Right.
And there was one in Bennington in a similar time frame, actually. So, but the idea is bring a community together to really identify some key action points that they want to work on. It's sort of democracy in its purest form, which is a group of like-minded citizens coming together and deciding on things they want to do and then actually doing them, getting them done. So that's that's a big part of the community of the Council on Rural Development's work. But then we also facilitate some statewide conversations as well. We do community work, but then we also, what we see is in our community work, certain topics reappear from one community to the next, and that drives some of our statewide work as well. You know, we've been working for well over a decade around broadband and connectivity and technology in communities. We worked on the creative economy in Vermont and in communities. And for the last few years, we've been doing work around the climate economy. We convened some statewide summits on the topic, and that's really just to sort of focus in on my work. That's sort of where we one of our priorities of action these days is what we call the climate economy work.
So what are we talking about when we say climate economy model community program? It sounds like we're looking at the interaction between a rural community and climate, the environment. Climate change.
And the economy, I would say. Sort of those three pieces, sort of community, climate, and the economy. You know, let me first sort of define the term climate economy, I think, because it's a little bit of a...
A little wonky.
Yeah, it's a little wonky. You know, one of the ways that we think about the climate economy at VCRD is we have all of these nations and places that have said we need to tackle this existential issue called climate change. And all of those places are trying to figure out the best models for basically weaning our economy of carbon, of fossil fuels. How are we going to reinvent our economy? For the longest time, our economy and fossil fuel consumption were totally married together, right? When the economy was booming, fossil fuel consumption also boomed. And what the new model is that we separate those two things so that we have a vibrant and successful economy while at the same time we reduce our fossil fuel use. And the idea here at the Vermont Council on Rural Development is, how can Vermont be a leader in that space? How can we be a model in that space? Because there's this massive economic transition that we are just at the beginning of. And for Vermont, we have a chance to sort of capture market share. How can Vermont be that model of a place that figures out how to do things more efficiently and without using sort of those traditional energy sources, using new energy sources to do that?
Before we get into the talk about what's going on here in Dorset, a few miles up the road from us here, let me just pivot for a moment and just ask you, the state has had it set some environmental objectives to reach by 2050, I believe.
Sure.
It sounds like we're not exactly on track to get there. I mean, is it your sense that some of those goals would just be too unrealistic to reach, or is there still time to kind of catch up? Because transportation obviously is one big factor that's going to be a really tough nut to crack.
It's a conundrum, right? Transportation in particular. I guess I would say, in terms of your question, it seems to me that we've got to get there, right? Whether we're going to actually hit the milestone, the closer milestone by 2025, I think is a fair question, given it doesn't feel like we're going in the right direction. But I think what we see around the state of Vermont is a collective will that we've got to get there. And what we have to do is figure out the tools so that homes, so that businesses actually can all contribute to getting us there. And communities, I should say, sort of homes, businesses, and communities. What are the tools that they need to use energy more efficiently and to generate more energy from renewable sources? All of those things, our pace of uptake is not as quick as I think many people would like it to be. There's a flip side, though, to that, which is, if you would ask people 10 years ago about electric vehicles, cold climate heat pumps, even solar, right? 10 years ago, people would say, solar, that's just not a Vermont. That's not real in Vermont.
Or it's too expensive.
Electric vehicles, similar. They'd be like, well, maybe for somebody, maybe a golf cart. The reality is we've got 3,000 electric vehicles registered in the state of Vermont, and that curve is getting steeper, right? Mm-hmm. We got thousands of Vermonters who've invested in solar in their own homes. We've got thousands of Vermonters who've put cold climate heat pumps in. So what we see is that we're at the beginning of that transition for so many folks around the state. And I think a lot of what our work is figuring out how to increase the uptake. How does that curve really ramp up in a way? And how do we make sure it really benefits all Vermonters? I think sometimes there's a perception with some of these advanced technologies that it's only sort of for the elite Vermonters who can afford it. Mm-hmm. And I think one of our great challenges is to make sure those new advancements really benefit all Vermonters.
Right, absolutely. And otherwise, we'll never scale up to what we need to get to. Let's talk about Dorset then and how that program there has been going. You guys have been meeting since August, I believe, and have a group of task forces set up. What have been some of the main issues that you've heard from the residents up there who've identified that this or that needs fixing?
You know, we it's been a really great process in Dorset. Dorset, just to give a little bit of background, the Model Communities Program, we open an application period every year, and we work in two communities each year. And Dorset, the Energy Committee, sort of working in collaboration with others in the community, applied to participate in the Model Communities Program. And what we've been doing over the summer and into the fall was really a series of public meetings, sort of convenings. And it starts, Paul Costello at VCRD describes it as a funnel. And you start with a really broad conversation, sort of brainstorming around what are ways to improve life in Dorset? What are things we could do both to improve the economy and to tackle climate change? And so you start with a brainstorming series of forums, and then at a second step in the process, you really decide on some priorities as a community. And for VCRD, and I should have said this in our introduction, we are really the facilitator to that conversation. We don't know what's in the best interest of the folks in Dorset. It's really up to the folks in Dorset to make those decisions. What we do is we facilitate a conversation and we sort of run a process to help the community make some of those decisions. The other thing we do is we bring in partners that are really helpful in the implementation work. So Dorset has really focused in now with the process is called Dorset Tomorrow, sort of a forward-looking process for the community. They focused in on four key priorities. The first, and so what's interesting about this Model Communities program is you really never know where the conversation is going to lead. And that's part of what actually is so fun about our work is you get to know places. You kind of fall in love with all these places that you go. But there's an unpredictability to it that's pretty fascinating. So one of the things Dorset's really decided to focus on is something called community unity, building community unity. If you, if you think about Dorset, there's a few different ways that maybe the community sort of splits up. There's a mountain that kind of separates Dorset Village and East Dorset along Route 7. So you could kind of think of it as the Route 7 corridor and the Route 30 corridor.
Right.
There's a little bit of a geographic split. There's sort of a seasonal split. There's a fair number of people who are not in Dorset all year round, right? They leave during the colder months.
The snowbirds.
That's right, as opposed to the rest of the folks who are there year round. And then there's probably, another way to put it is some socioeconomic diversity in Dorset. And so one of the key things that folks decided they really wanted to think about is how do we work more as a total community of Dorset, not in these separate categories? How do we bring ourselves together? And so that group's going to think about a couple of things. One is, are there some events that we can be doing on a regular basis that just gets everybody together? Potlucks at the firehouse kind of thing. And then they also are thinking very much about communications. Like, is there a common source of communication for the community? You know, one example is that the town of Dorset and the town manager there, Rob, they have a great town newsletter that they send electronically. Turns out a bunch of people don't even know about that newsletter. It's a really useful tool for them to find out about things going on in Dorset. So they're working on building up some of those communications tools.
Yeah, that's an issue, I'm sure, for a lot of towns where just getting the word out about one thing or another that's hyper-local is just not as easy as you'd think.
And maybe this gives me a moment for a little bit of flattery, which is like, thank goodness for the work that you do and the cable access channels. Honestly, like as we travel around Vermont, the resource of local media outlets and local reporting is just precious. Like it creates that common sense of what's going on that really is invaluable. So just a little aside to say kudos. So let me just quickly, I'll go on too long about these things, but the other three areas of focus in Dorset are housing and attracting new residents. Like if you wanted to move to Dorset with your family right now and find a house and you're a middle-income family, it is really a challenge to find sort of an affordable house, whether it's a rental or to own. It's pretty challenging to find that affordable house in Dorset. And yet, they have wonderful schools. They have beautiful natural environment. There's a lot that would make Dorset a pretty enticing place to move to. And so that group is really thinking about how do we entice more people to move to Dorset and give them places to move to, right? And that in part intersects with, there's a conversation going on around the Raptor Lane property that was recently acquired by the town in the last couple of years, and thinking about what's going to happen with that property and what are some opportunities.
Yeah, I guess there's a proposal to have a housing project of some sort.
Potentially. That's like, that's a possibility, certainly.
Or at least a housing development of some sort there, along with hiking trails and other outdoor recreation things.
I'll just mention quickly the other two priorities. There's a group working on energy issues. They're really, you know, it was interesting, that conversation, they realize there's many in the community that don't realize some of the existing opportunities around energy. And so they're really going to deploy a community campaign sort of about education and helping people sort of move down the path, whether it's doing insulation or solar or electric vehicles, trying to get people down that path towards those choices. And then a fourth group is really thinking about transportation. And I would say they're focused on a couple of key things. One is around walking and biking and making Dorset a more enticing place. There already is great walking and biking in Dorset, to be clear, but people feel like there's actually the opportunity to make it even better.
Yeah.
And then also thinking about what are some opportunities to make some different transportation choices there as well.
These all sound like topics that have a lot of resonance statewide. I mean, when we listen to a lot of the conversation about Vermont, and particularly rural Vermont, all those subjects that you just mentioned, transportation, energy, housing, we could probably add population, bringing in or slowing down the aging of the state, however you want to put it, is something that seems to come up frequently when we talk about, well, particularly small towns in rural Vermont. Chittenden County and Burlington seem to be holding their own, doing quite well, kind of an interesting mirror to the nation as a whole. But I guess what as you folks at the Council on Rural Development look at rural Vermont, are these all issues that you're finding coming up elsewhere as well, or some of them peculiar just to Dorset?
I would say both, right? Some are particular to Dorset, and even the common issues are sort of distinct in every different community, right? That's part of the pleasure, I think, of being at the Council on Rural Development, is we really, there's no one-size-fits-all solution, I think, and communities really sort of build things from the bottom up. At the same time, some of the themes are absolutely in common, right? Like that concern about sort of the demographic shift and whether or not our state and our communities are places where young families can sort of move to and thrive, right? We hear that almost everywhere we go, which is, gosh, my children have moved away. And wouldn't we love to have a community where our children stay or come back to? Mm. And the question is, what does it take to sort of allow for that and to enable that?
That's really an ongoing question. I mean, I guess that's where the economy comes in, right? I mean, if they're going to be drawn back, then they have to have jobs that are going to make it possible to live here and buy those houses that are hard to find and all the rest of it.
Yeah, I've sort of come to think of it on both ends, which is it's absolutely about the economy and the ability to earn an income, to support a family or a household. So there's the income side, but then there's the expense side as well, right? Like, is this an affordable place? Is a community an affordable community? You know, Efficiency Vermont just updated a report that they call their Energy Burden Report, and it looks at what the typical household spends on their energy costs across electricity, across heating, and transportation, all of that. A typical Vermont family is spending well over $5,000 each year on those energy costs.
Wow.
You know, and for a middle-income family, with a median income of about, $50,000, let's say, that's a pretty significant portion of that household budget.
Yeah.
So one of the things we think about with our program and communities are thinking about is how can we help address some of the cost of living of being in our communities, at the same time having great employment opportunities for folks as well.
Are there any ideas that are starting to bubble up around that as to how that energy cost could be contained or reduced? Just trying to think of that off the top of your head. You're talking about oil heat, or I guess for a lot of people, does that mean we want it not only for economic reasons but for environmental reasons, perhaps encourage people to transition away from burning oil or fossil fuels and into something that's a little bit cleaner, whether that's electricity or solar, whatever. Or are there some other strategies that you're considering that would help us?
Things
in that direction.
I think fuel switching is like the perfect example, right? It's like, how do we, if you're currently in a car that's getting, let's say, 25 miles per gallon, you know, that move, let's say it's time to replace that car, right? There is tremendous savings to be made if you go to a car that's getting 40 miles per gallon. Right, that 15 miles per gallon, or even better, if you look at the savings of going to an electric vehicle, over the life of that vehicle, there's tremendous savings in the increased efficiency of an electric vehicle, both just from a reduced energy cost, but also in a maintenance sense as well. Electric vehicles being much more easier to maintain because there's no engine, right?
Yeah, fewer things to break down.
As an electric vehicle owner myself, the kids and I have figured out the best way to identify a fully electric vehicle is there's no tailpipe, right? You just look in the back, and if there's no tailpipe, that's an electric vehicle, you know, which just gives you a sense of like the, it's a simpler machine to maintain, right? And that means it's less costly over the life of that vehicle. But the key is someone's got to, at that moment of purchase, right, how do you inform that choice? How do you potentially subsidize that choice so that that becomes the most affordable and economical choice? Because over the lifetime of that choice, it's actually going to return a lot more money to that household budget. And you just think about that, whether it's your vehicle, whether it's your heating system, whether it's putting solar on your rooftop. It's that whole menu of options for people, and thinking about a lot of what those investments do is they keep more dollars actually circulating in the local economy, as opposed to exporting those dollars out of the local economy as well.
What about broadband? That's another topic that seems to come up an awful lot when we're talking about rural Vermont. That the bandwidth just simply isn't there to like allow a lot of people to be remote workers, which I guess we're trying to attract as many as we can, or just to kind of give a boost to businesses that would be sort of internet dependent. In your conversations up in Dorset, has that emerged as any kind of a talking point?
Broadband hasn't been persistent in Dorset, but it certainly is persistent in other places that we go with the Council on Rural Development. And I would say it's not just broadband in terms of internet connectivity. It's also cellular connectivity as well.
Okay,
right?
Sure.
That's a lot of people sort of don't mention that other piece to telecommunications.
Right.
But there are, as we all know, there are lots of places in Vermont, and in fact, the Department of Public Service did a nice job of documenting this recently. There are a lot of dead zones in the state of Vermont. And if you think about, like, when you're buying a home, knowing that your cell phone does or doesn't work there certainly has an impact on the property value of that home. But also, here's another way I've thought about it. Like, we think about rural transportation solutions, right? And one of the things people aspire to is having sort of on-demand public transit, sort of an Uber for rural communities, right?
Hmm.
But when you think about Uber, what is it dependent on? It's dependent on a smartphone with connectivity where you can call that vehicle to respond to your need.
Right.
Well, when we have so many swaths of the state without that cellular coverage, it really does present a challenge. Hmm. So there are communities very much thinking about both of those topics, for sure.
One of the things that has struck me occasionally as I've tried to follow events around the state and look at communities that are either struggling or doing well, is one important ingredient into determining whether or not they're surviving or thriving is local leadership. It seems like communities that do seem to be able to kind of buck whatever negative trend may be going on are characterized by having a cadre of local leaders, maybe unofficial, you know, untitled people, but maybe they're just business people or ordinary citizens, or maybe they're a town manager or something like that. And some communities seem to have that kind of, you know, spark plug group that kind of just on their own initiative goes out and kind of makes things happen or refuses to accept that, oh, the factory that employed half the town is closing and now what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. Is that your sense of it as well? Is that an important ingredient to seeing whether or not communities kind of can move forward in these sort of changing economic environmental times?
Most definitely. And in fact, for the Council on Rural Development, for the last 2 years, we've convened statewide summits on what we call community leadership. Because it's such an important ingredient for communities in moving things forward. And I think you did a great job of describing it. It's both those people with the titles, maybe the select board or planning commission chair or the town manager or town administrator. Those people are certainly important, but it's also the people without titles who really, what we see often in Vermont towns is somebody gets an idea and they have sort of the skills and the charisma to attract other people to work with them on that idea, and they just figure out how to move it forward. And there is, to me, no more sort of powerful sort of example of both local democracy and really making your home a better place than those people who take on that idea and really figure out how to make it a reality. And part of what we as an organization are really, and we're not alone in this, many other organizations around the state try to figure out what are the special ingredients there and how do we replicate that? How do we learn from those communities and those individuals who have figured out how to move things forward and how to get things done? And how do we spread those skills around the state to other places? Mm. You know, one of the things when we think about sort of Vermont as a predominantly rural state, and there's so much of this sort of national conversation around the decline of rural America, right? And this sort of flocking of young people to more urban settings. And I think as we in Vermont think about how we buck that trend and how we, as I think it was Al Moulton described Vermont back in the 60s, how we retain our status as the beckoning country, right, where people come to, it seems to me one of the things that we really can capitalize on is we live in a collection of small communities where somebody with a good idea can actually turn that into reality, right? They have access to their select board. They have access to their fellow community members. They have access to their legislators. And you really can make a difference in your own town. And we see that happen all over Vermont. And to me, that's part of what our strength is as a state and part of what we need to share, I guess, as we think about how are we bringing more people here over time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I hear that same point mentioned several times whenever I go out to conferences or, you know, gatherings of groups of people, the fact that you have access to, you know, basically everyone from the governor on down. It's not really all that hard to get a hold of them. And that certainly is a lot different from states like New York or California or Texas or Florida or wherever. But that sort of life on a human scale thing, I think, does have a lot of attraction, particularly as time goes by here. Before we have to run, I just wanted to kind of just return quickly here to Dorset. What are the next steps here in that project? You're having a group of task forces meeting in the coming weeks, and where do things go from there?
Yeah, so we, at this point, there are those four different task forces working on, just to remind you, transportation, energy, housing, and community unity. And there's local leaders to those task forces, and they're sort of on their independent schedule of pulling together meetings and implementing action plans. My encouragement to anyone who wants to get involved with the Dorset Tomorrow process who isn't is, We have a website for the Council on Rural Development. It's called vtrural.org is the URL for that. And if you go to the Model Communities Program, you can find a link to Dorset there. And what I would encourage anybody to do is just sign up for the email list for Dorset tomorrow, because what I'm trying to do on a regular basis is send communications out, providing updates, and some sense of when meeting dates and times are, so that anyone who wants to get involved in that process can do so.
Is there going to be another town that will have a model climate community program?
Absolutely, yeah. We're looking ahead to 2020. And in fact, part of this connects to what you were talking about leadership. As we think about our work with the Model Communities Program for 2020, we'll continue to sort of solicit interest and participate with one particular town, but we're also going to do a leadership program around the climate economy where we recruit leaders from many different towns who want to work on climate and energy and economy issues. And we'll bring them together as a group to do some training, some sort of peer learning with each other, and then project implementation back in their communities, and we'll support them in that work. So stay tuned for that in 2020.
All right. Well, thank you, John, for being with us to walk us through all of that. That sounds like an extremely exciting project and a lot going on and more to come.
Well, thank you, Andrew. Really appreciate it. I get going and yeah. I really appreciate the opportunity to come share that.
So. Terrific.
Thanks so much.
And thank you all as well for being with us today, and hope you found the show interesting, and well, if you're a Dorset resident, you'll hop over and sign up for that mailing list and go to one of the meetings. Anyway, this has been GNET TV's in-depth series, and really appreciate you all being with us. Thanks again, John Copans of the Climate Economy Model Community Program. And we'll see you again the next time.
Have a
great day.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.